Hello, Randy J. Bomber. We're back for more of Satanism and Evolutionism, Part 2. Last time was our longest session, and I will try to top it, because I will not have enough for Part 3, I don't think. You look at the website, okay? Notice I had two people I didn't cover yet, so I will cover them. And one person in particular, a long time, and some more, okay? Dachshund, pedophile friend number 7. Waddell's biographer said that he was very involved with the upbringing of his children and that nothing was complete without his cooperation and approval. Why would he cooperate and approve of having his daughter babysat and photographed in immodest poses by a known pedophile, Charles Dachshund, alias Lewis Carroll, who has been alleged to be the infamous Jack the Ripper? What kind of a man would be suspected or accused of such an act? You know, he wrote Alice in Wonderland, and we'll cover more of him in just a few minutes. Robert Scott, Revised Version Committee member and friend number 8. Robert Scott was a co-author with Henry Waddell of the Waddell-Scott Greek-English Lexicon. Waddell, however, seems to have taken a much broader and lengthier role. Scott was, too, a priest in the Church of England and held students hostage critiquing the Holy Scriptures in his various professorships. In the section on Waddell, we will have already peeked into Scott and Waddell's wine and talk party. You can go on for that. Of course, Scott carried his wrong part with him to his RV committee. When you read today's Bible software programs with supposedly literal English translation of Greek New Testament words, you are often just reading the revised version of Westcott and Hort of 1881, complete with English words from the Waddell Scott Greek English Lexicon. Robert Scott was there to make certain, again, mistakes and all. Waddell's contributions were a status Scott's, for the poem has two endings, indicting him as well. The part that is good was written by Scott, by Waddell was written the part that was not. Political bias and even jealousy do not entirely explain the repeated imputations by Waddell's contemporaries. Alright, that's enough with Robert Scott. Let's talk about Waddell's end. Why was Waddell's word and his lexicon cold to evangelicals and swarming warmly with atheists, pantheists, universalists, socialists, evolutionists, racists, chums with Luciferians, alleged pedophiles, and New World Order utopian dreamers? Waddell's circle of comrades formed a dark, impenetrable wall around his mind. Waddell's biography indicates that his brain and his lexicon were bound with a hard cover from front to finish. His biographer said he had none of the conservative instincts which are so commonly found in elderly men. Before Waddell's death, he writes of his lifelong view that all religions lead home. He says, We are all going the same way in our time for crossing the bar, but cannot be far removed. Today, too many are looking for a way back to Greece, roaming needlessly page by page, staring ceaselessly at software program after program, getting no closer to God than Waddell Scott's wine-soaked English mind. Why such labor when the word is nigh thee, even in the mouth? Romans 10:8. All right. Back to Charles Dachshund, alias Lewis Carroll. He has the longest one. He's really probably the worst one of them all. Worse even than Max Mueller. Alice in Wonderland, story of Waddell, the lexicographer and his little girl. That was Alice in Wonderland is the story of Waddell, the lexicographer and his little girl. Dean Henry Waddell is the author of the seminal Waddell Scott Greek English Lexicon, which provides definitions for all Greek English New Testament lexicons. Admissions in the following prove that Waddell's words have worked their way into to Marvin Vincent's Word Studies in the New Testament, J.H. Thayer's Greek-English Lexicons, and from there into W.E. Vine's Expository Dictionary and George Rickerberry's Greek-English Interlinear New Testament. Waddell is also well known as the father of Alice. And what Alice Waddell, for whom and about whom Alice in Wonderland and Alice Through the Looking Glass were written. The books are actually stories about Waddell's, the lexicon, and their little daughter, Alice. Charles Dachshund, alias Lewis Carroll, author of these books, was one of the Waddell's most intimate, lifelong friends. Dachshund was also called a fiend by those who knew him personally. Cakeless, a parody of Dodgson's perverted relationship with the Waddell family, appeared anonymously at Oxford in 1874. Instead of Dodgson, nor ever leave the cursed fiend at rest, leave him at Wonderland with some hard-hitting foe, and through the looking glass let him survey the blow. Man, people really hated him. Why? We'll read on about that. Charles Dodgson worked for decades as a deacon for Waddell's Christ Church Cathedral as one of his college's mere handful of teachers. In these positions, he worked closely with and under Waddell for 36 years. At the same time as his alter ego, Lewis Carroll, he was what criminologists and psychiatrists call an obsessive-compulsive pedophiliac. Waddell's daughter, Alice, was one of the main objects of his unnatural obsession. Waddell allowed Dodgson to take provocative pictures of his 7-year-old daughter, Alice, consumed as a child prostitute. The dust cover of Carroll's biography by Donald Thomas, Oxford graduate and chairman at the University of Wales, says that Lewis Carroll was on the dangerous edge of things, closer to the twilight underworld of psychopathology, crime and vice than his admirers thought possible. For decades, Waddell allowed and abetted Dodgson's criminal activities to be perpetuated where they lived together on the same grounds. Waddell's pagan-infested lexicon was only the beginning of his contributions to Dodgson's mental decay. Donald Thomas shows that Dodgson's view and writings were the fruit of Dodgson's classical education. He was importunate in persuading little nudities to pose before his camera. Within 40 years of his death, his progeny, Alice in Wonderland, had escaped the nursery to rub shoulders with Swift and Marquis de Sade and Freud and Surrealism. Wow. Readers are taken aback as much that was macabre, cruel, and what was later called sadistic in his entertainment for children. His poem in Alice in Wonderland said, "Speak roughly to your little boy and beat him when he sneezes." Thomas says of Dodgson's sadism, by 1862 he was not above sending Hallam Tennyson, a little boy, a knife for his birthday and suggesting laconically that the child should try cutting himself with it regularly, doing so particularly severely on his birthday. I would call him a murderer. And here, Dodgson wrote many incriminating letters, which have even led to some to identify Dodgson as the real, yet never identified, Jack the Ripper. Even today, searching the internet under Jack the Ripper brings up Dodgson's name as one of the remaining suspects in the Macrobian bone-chilling case, the details of which are unmentionable. Dodgson's known diary of August 26th, 1891, hid his thoughts about Jack the Ripper. Thomas described the Dodgson Carroll psychosis. There are, of course, two personalities in the mind, the Dodgsonian and the Carolingian. If the Reverend Dodgson had an occasion, looked more carefully at what Mr. Carroll was doing or writing, he would scarcely have concealed a shudder. So, he's saying that if Charles Dodgson hadn't had this criminal mind, he probably would have jumped back looking at his writings. And you think, Alice in Wonderland, come on! Oh, yeah! Alice in Wonderland even talks about evolution. We'll talk about that later. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde alternate, page after page, in Dodgson's letters, diaries, and biographies. On one page, he is a prude, and on the next, he is a pervert. He was like his own Alice in Wonderland, who said she was very fond of pretending to be two people, but concluded, why, there's hardly enough of me left to make one respectable person. Derek Hudson, another of Dodgson's biographers, calls him Paradox himself. It is not surprising that the strange dichotomy of his character should have revealed himself in itself in its writing. Subtle changes of significance in statements, no sooner made them, they were abruptly reversed. Anyway, in Alice in Wonderland, he quipped, "We had the best of educations. I went to the classical master, though. He was an old crab. He taught laughing and grief, Latin and Greek." That sounds exactly like it. Charles had naturally steeped himself in Plato and Aristotle and later dedicated Symbolic Logic Part 1 to the memory of Aristotle, who taught his form of evolution. Dawson's diary complains that he was not secure from annoyance at night. One boarding school student summarized life in these schools saying, "The first night I was there at 9 years old, I was compelled to eat Eva's apple quite up. Indeed, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil was stripped absolutely bare. There was no fruit left to gather." Odell's friends, Jowett and Stanley, had similar homosexual boarding school experiences. Anyway, Alice in Wonderland. Dawson was the children's babysitter, the Waddell children, at times. He visited Waddell's house almost daily. He took Alice and her sister and brother on all-day rowboat excursions frequently. He was on one of these boating expeditions that he created and told the children of the story of Alice in Wonderland. That evening, they had a tea in Dawson's room at 8:30, and the children were then returned to the deanery. At Alan's request, he stayed up all night to write out the story of Alice's Adventures Underground, as he had titled it that day. All of the occupants of the boat who first heard of the tale of Alice are characters in the first book. The dodo is Charles, the duck is Duckworth, the lory is Lorena, and the eaglet, Edith. Other characters in Alice in Wonderland include the Riddell family and governess, a few other Oxford professors, as well as a few members of royalty. He worked these memories ingeniously into his tales, the river expeditions, the walks, the croquet games, the long deanery visits, and most particularly the two royal occasions. All presented Charles with the raw material for the Alice books. The original edition, which Dawson had written and illustrated for Alice, was often to be seen on the drawing room table at the deanery, said Robinson Duckworth, who joined Dawson on the day he conceived the story. In Alice Through the Looking Glass, the story begins in Waddell's deanery, and Alice is accompanied by the family. Okay. Alice in Dawson Land. In 1859, the year Origin of the Species was written. I just caught that, okay. In 1859, Waddell let Dawson photograph his 7-year-old daughter, Alice, in quite a provocative pose, partly disrobed in imitation of disheveled Haymarket prostitute girls as younger and younger than Alice Waddell. Neither the Haymarket area at the United Hotel in Charles Street, but Dawson made his London headquarters for most of his life. When there was a day free from teaching, he would invariably stay the night in London and go to the theater. When the Waddells left for Madeira, Spain, Dawson was with the children constantly. In 1863, when Alice was 11, he took the Waddell children to the marriage celebration of the Prince of Wales. He made one of his perverse jokes, not to be repeated here, when Alice likewise thought was not very good. The friendship with the Waddell children became an obsession. Oxford gossip had it that Dawson asked to court Alice when she was 11 and he was 31. When he was refused, a friend wrote in 1878 that Dawson was half gone out of his mind in consequence having been refused by the real Alice Waddell. Okay, so this guy is crazy. He's gotta be crazy. He really was. Dawson's nephew, S.D. Collingwood, admitted that his family was aware of Dawson's intense love for her, though she was only a child. Dawson's poem about Alice noted the 20-year difference in their ages. The time be fleet, and I and thou are half a life asunder. Still she haunts me phantom-wise, Alice moving under skies. Okay, he's crazy, okay? Dean Waddell's blunted sensitivities may not have been shared by his wife. In later years, Alice's sister wrote to Alice, reminding her that his manner became too affectionate to you as you grew older, and that mother spoke to him about it, and that offended him, so he ceased coming to visit again. Mrs. Waddell widely identified Dawson's attention as excessive, intrusive, improper, perhaps impure. His attraction to be prepubescent females became a lifelong obsession. Dawson even described himself as vile in his diary. After 1863, he saw less of the children. Thomas observes, love or infatuation on his side, if they existed, perished when she reached adolescence. When Alice reached 12, their friendship cooled. "Unfortunately," wrote Alice, "my mother tore up all the letters that Mr. Dodson wrote to me when I was a small girl." Allison's son later that Dodson must have written hundreds of letters to Alice, all of which her mother destroyed. Alice said, "It is awful thought to contemplate what may have perished in the deanery waste basket, paper basket. If they were anything like the letters still extant, which he wrote to other very young girls, one can see why a mother would tear them to shreds and shield their little daughter from any contact with the writer." They had remained friends, though, and into the 1870s, Mrs. Liddell brought the full-grown girls to be photographed in Dodson's studio. When Mrs. Liddell helped H.L. Thomason with Henry Liddell's posthumous biography, she made certain that Dodson was not mentioned, although he was perhaps even closer to the dean throughout his life than the other man mentioned. She also censored every line of the biography, burying the wolf with the man, and penning for posterity a brief sketch of his sheep's clothing. The characters in Dodson's Alice in Wonderland and Alice Through the Looking Glass were taken from the people familiar to both Alice and Dodson. His humor did not spare his personal friends. Thomas asks, "Was the Red Queen or the Queen of Hearts a caricature of Mrs. Liddell, the protective mother? Or did it mock the children's watchful governess?" Dodson himself described the Red Queen as the concentrated essence of all governesses, and hence she was patterned after Liddell's governess, Miss Prickett. Dodson did write about Mrs. Liddell in the vision of the three T's and the new belfry, which he called a giant copy of the Greek lexicons. The whole town knew of Dodson's obsessions. As Alice Liddell grew to womanhood, their names were still linked in Oxford wit and Oxford gossip. Indeed, his supposed infatuation with all the Liddell sisters was gossip between Christ Church for some years after there could have been any substance to it. For example, as late as 1874, John Howe Jenkins, a student of Christchurch, wrote a satire called Cakeless about the Liddell Dodson affair. With Greek names and togas, it paralleled the tent tea parties of Dodson's Alice in Wonderland to similar parties at the Liddell household. Jenkins' second attack on the Liddells and Dodson's was called The Adventures of Apollo and Diana. He depicted Dean Liddell as Apollo, the walking lexicon, his wife as the pagan goddess Diana, and Craftsjohn as Dodson. In the farce, when their daughter Allison is to be married, Craftsjohn, Dodson, says, "I do protest against this match, so let me speak. By circles, segments, and radii," Dodson taught mathematics. Jenkins was sent down for this by Liddell. Alice later courted Queen Victoria's son, Prince Leopold, for a time. That when she finally married Mr. Hargreaves, she asked Prince Leopold to be godfather to her son, whom she named Leopold. In return, Prince Leopold named his first daughter Princess Alice. This second Alice also became one of Dodson's little friends. Alice's marriage to Hargreaves may have seemed to be the greatest tragedy in his life. Alice did name her third son Carol Liddell after Dodson's pen name. Willis Carroll and her father were Dean Liddell. She asked Dodson to be the child's godfather for her infant baptism, a practice which breeds wall-to-wall unregenerate church members such as Dodson and Liddell. A Devil's Bible for Babes, Through the Looking Glass. Dodson's character Humpty Dumpty in the second Alice book, Through the Looking Glass, was directly patterned after Humpty Henry Liddell, even down to his first initial. The wall Humpty Dumpty sat on represented Liddell's kingdom. Dodson said its doors were not open for egress, but for the surreptitious drainage of stagnant congregation. Dodson's book playfully lampooned Liddell's lexicon in its remolding of the meaning of his words. Throughout the story, words had whatever meaning a character gave them. Humpty Dumpty, Henry Liddell, epitomized Dodson's thesis. One literary critic sums up the message in Dodson's books. "Remember that words are invented to refer to things." Alice said a language is worth 1,000 points, pounds a word. The devil knows this because Psalm 138:2 says, God has magnified his word above all his name. No wonder the serpent directs his attack by redefining God's words. And through the looking glass, Alys disagrees with the Red Queen when she defines a hill as a valley. The Red Queen retorted, "You may call it nonsense if you like," she said, "but I've heard nonsense compared with which would be as sensible as a dictionary." When the cat defines growling as purring, Alys says, "Call it what you like." As Alys and Humpty Dumpty exchange academic pomposities, they expose the malicious motives of lexicographers. I don't know what you mean by glory," Alice said. Humpty Dumpty smiled contemptuously. "Of course you don't, till I tell you. I meant there's a nice knockdown argument for you." "But glory doesn't mean a nice knockdown argument," Alice objected. "When I use a word," Humpty Dumpty said in a rather scornful tone, "it means just what I choose it to mean, neither more nor less." "The question is," said Alice, "whether you can make words mean different things." "The question is," said Humpty Dumpty, "which is the master? Be net master, that's all. They got a temper, some of them, particularly verbs. They're the proudest. Adjectives you can do anything with, but not verbs. However, I can manage the whole lot." "You seem very clever at explaining words, sir," said Alice. Liddell and Dachshund both overthrow the Bible. Alice in Wonderland was in no sense a goody-goody book, notes one scholar. It was the first children's book which mocked authority figures. Expressing the rebel the Dachshund was, a good deal of Alice in Wonderland depicts the caricature of a grotesque and doomed authoritarianism. He broke with tradition. Many of the earlier children's books written for the upper classes had lofty purposes. They had to teach and preach. Primers taught children religious principles alongside multiplication tables. A. In Adam's fall, we see it all. Children learned to fear sin, and their books were meant to aid and abet the process. The Alice books fly in the face of that tradition, destroy it. He was fed up with all the moral baggage. He went further and parodied the entire practice of moralizing. Dachshund began a revolution in children's literature. Whatsoever things are true, pure, lovely, has given way to the fable, the perverse, the serial, and the macabre, just like the Greek mythology excess to produce the Waddell Scott lexicon, Philippians 4:8. Parents now read Dachshund's books to their children at bedtime instead of the Holy Bible. Next to the Bible and Shakespeare, there are books most widely and most frequently translated and quoted. The mutual anti-God agenda of lexicons and fairy tales need to be exposed. Dachshund's blasphemy. The Bible says, "For we are now see through a glass darkly, but then face to face." 1 Corinthians 13:12. A lot of people memorize 1 Corinthians 13. "What will we see and know once we get past the glass?" Dachshund pretends to take Alice through that looking glass and show her his version of Jesus Christ. He shows her a mean red queen who has thorns all around her head. He is mocking Jesus Christ's red, blood-tinged crown of thorns. He shows her a mock of Jesus, whom he describes as a foolish old man. Revelation 1:14 says, "His hairs were as white like wool, as white as snow, and his eyes were as a flame of fire." Dachshund through the looking glass mocks, saying, "Whose hair was whiter than the snow, whose face was very like a crow, his eyes like cinders all aglow, whose rocked his body to and fro, and muttered a mumbling and low, as if his mouth were full of dough, who snorted like a buffalo, a setting on a gate." Man, he sure is suffering in hell right now, that is for sure. Waddell and Dachshund wine cellar, Proverbs 20:21 says, "Wine is a mocker." Dachshund's mocking and blasphemous tongue was set on fire of hell. Perhaps its flames broke through Waddell's basement wine cellar, where he had wine parties almost every night. And Dachshund through the looking glass, Humpty, Henry Waddell, true to character, came to the door with a corkscrew in his hand to open champagne. It must have been for the party where they put their glasses upon their heads like extinguishers and drank all that trickled down their faces. Others upset the decanters and drank the wine as it ran off the edges of the tables. Christ Church under Waddell seemed in decline. Small wonder that fathers who cared about their sons' education were more likely to send them than to Balliol or New College. At that time, Christ Church was not a leading college, and there was a great deal of too much card playing, drinking, and rowdiness. There were wine parties almost every night. What kind of Christ Church is that? It's not Christ. Waddell's College had a smoking room and extensive cellars whose stock varied between 20,000 and 25,000 bottles of wine, whiskey, and beer. This seems to be quite a huge stock for less than 200 students and faculty. Alcohol, including beer, whiskey, and wine, was also served to students and faculty at meals. In Liddell's wining and dining room, our students sat by social class. There was one chair for the dean, benches for all others. Undergraduates of noble family, wearers of the gold-tasseled cap and gown, sat at the doctor's table. Anyway, you go for that about how he produced way too much beer. For Liddell, Dachshund held wine tastings, expanded the wine cellars, and filled them with valuable vintages to slake the Dunn's thirst. Doctrinal disputation took place over glasses of port and in easy chairs. Dachshund's pack of cards from Alice in Wonderland surely made their way into the dining room. The position at Waddell's wine curator was Dachshund's only job at Christ Church for the next 9 years, until his declining health limited him to his rooms. Remember, Alice in Wonderland experienced her new version of the underworld after she found a little bottle and round its neck a paper label with the words, "Drink me," beautifully printed in larger letters. After she drank from it, she said, "What a curious feeling." The only bottled beverage that elicits a feeling and makes one giddy is alcohol. Dachshund's book is conditioning children to drink alcohol, anticipating not a hangover and delirium tremors, but an adventure and an escape. He prods, as it seems quite dull and stupid for life to go on in the common way. Why drinking from a little bottle could alter one's pint-sized perception and make him feel 9 feet high, a colossus. Alice found another bottle. She uncorked it and put it to her lips. "I know something interesting is about to happen," she said to herself. "Whenever I eat or drink something, so I'll just see what this bottle does." Before she had drunk half the bottle, she found her head pressing against the ceiling. She hastily put down the bottle, saying to herself, "That's quite enough. I do wish I hadn't drunk so much." Head pressing, hangover aside, Alice later concludes that if she's got to grow up, I suppose I ought to eat or drink something else or other. The caterpillar directs her to try the psychedelic mushrooms, which again change her perception. "Have some wine," the March Hare said in an encouraging tone. And when the mushrooms wore off, the Allison reluctantly leaves Dachshund's Underland, which, having learned that all would change to dull reality without the little magic bottle. Waddell treasured these tales, Dachshund told his daughter. Perhaps Alice would grow up to be the next curator of wine. That's in that book that is being read to millions of children every day. He practically advertised beer in there. Now, what about drugs? Dachshund's now illegal drugs. Dachshund spent most of his free time with the London bohemian artist culture, a group not unacquainted with spiritism, the occult, and altered states of consciousness. One such acquaintance died from an overdose of drugs, Lizzie Rossetti. Dachshund's Alice books subtly promoted drinking to alter how one feels and demonstrated the use of perception-altering psychedelics, such as eating mushrooms and using a glass pipe, a hookah, to smoke hashish and marijuana. Dachshund depicted a caterpillar on a mushroom posed in the pagan Hindu lotus position, sitting on the top with his arms folded, quietly smoking a long hookah. This is a device used by drug addicts to smoke hemp, cannabis, a drug also mentioned in the Life and Letters of B.F. Westcott. We'll talk about that. Maybe we'll figure that in this session. Soon Alice folded her hands and began. "In my youth," Father William replied to his son, "I fear it might injure the brain. But now that I'm perfectly sure I have none, why, I do it again and again." To change her perception, the caterpillar then instructed Alice to eat some of the mushroom. The mushroom makes her like a serpent, who thinks the next thing is to get into that beautiful garden. Beautiful garden. In Dachshund's next book, the garden has a tree in the middle, as in Genesis 3. The mind-altering effects of psychedelic mushrooms in the Indian and Middle Eastern smoking of cannabis and hashish and hookahs were well known at this time to Dachshund's community of bohemian friends. So wait a minute. Just wait a minute. You read Alice in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass, then read Genesis, you'll think that Satan is the hero of the plot, won't you? Huh, won't you? You know? like one person, it was one man went to this cannibal country. Luckily, they thought he was a god, so they didn't kill him. But you know, he tried to witness to them, and he told them the story of Judas betraying him. And their culture was that if you betray your country, you are a hero, and if you die, you're a hero. So they thought Judas was the hero of the plot. Though their cultures ended up actually getting them saved later. But anyway, the children who bred the drug culture of the 1960s had Dawson's White Rabbit as their teacher. A song entitled White Rabbit, recorded by Jefferson Airplane and written by Grace Slick, was, according to their official biography, intended as a slap toward parents who read their children stories such as Alice in Wonderland, in which Alice uses several drug-like substances in order to change herself, and then wonder why their children grew up to do drugs. The lyrics say, "Tell him a hugger, smoking caterpillar, has given you the call. Call Alice when she was just small, and your mind is moving low. Go ask Alice, I think she'll know." The song continues with references to Dawson through the looking glass, in which a talking chess piece says, "And you've just some kind of mushroom," making reference to a mind-altering psilocybin mushrooms. The song White Rabbit continues saying, "Remember what the Dormouse said, feed your head," meaning take drugs and think what you want. You know, drugs really alters your mind. Dawson's Children's Bible. Now I'm about to get to why evolution, he believed in evolution, you know? Okay, so Dawson's Children's Bible. Waddell and Dawson were determined to find a replacement for the Holy Bible. Waddell for adults and Dawson for children. Dawson planned the expurgation of the Bible. He begins Alice in Wonderland charging, and what is the use of a book, thought Alice, without pictures? Meaning the Bible. You know, the Bible doesn't have pictures. They're adding them to the storybooks, but, you know, I don't know the meaning of those half of those long words, and what's more, I don't believe you do either. Long words. Kind of like, notwithstanding, killeth, loveth, you know, all these long words talked about in the Bible. You know, armor bearer. Huh. In Dawson's later, most depraved years, he proposed a child's Bible purged of coarseness and terror. He wanted to do away with hell and the doctrine of everlasting punishment. The story of Alice in Wonderland is one long proof, purposely made in the minds of impressionable children. The center of the earth is not a burning hell, as described in the Bible. It is as the Greek myths, classics, and lexicons described it. A place with no fire, where many creatures live, near Alice's River of Tears, the Styx. In the world of Alice through the looking glass, Alice said, "There will be no one to scold me away from the fire. Oh, what fun it'll be." Alice fell. Down, down, down. I must be getting somewhere near the center of the earth. Center was spelled R-E back then, she said. Alice entered this underworld through a door, a counterfeit of the gates of hell, Matthew 16:18. She is a key, a counterfeit of the keys of hell and death, Revelation 1:18. She opened the door and found no burning hell, just a playful group of evolving half-men, half-animal creatures. The loveliest garden, and the beds of bright flowers and those cool fountains. Dawson's tale tries to outreach the rich man's cry, "Cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame." Luke 16:24. Were you descended from your apes on your mother's or your father's side? Dawson's books were replete with animals that were part human and part animal. He viewed a human as merely a refined animal. Thomas sees the extinct dodo and several of other Alice characters as reflection of the Darwinian debate of 1859. Because remember, he started all this in 1859, remember? Dawson invented a board game called Natural Selection, in which the game's winner is the survivor of the fittest. He sent Darwin a print of one of his photographs, offering to give him others if he wanted them. Dawson wrote a letter to the Pall Mall Gazette, using Darwin's book as an example of how all great things take him to research. The January 30th, 1865 issue of Vanity Fair carried a cartoon of Waddell with the blurb, "Maintaining the British aristocracy and superior and privileged race. Vanity Fair is terrible, and I'm not surprised they mentioned evolution in it. Dachshund like Odell was a consummate snob and making non-descending jokes about Negroes, referring to them as niggers. Just as did revised version member Fenton John A. Hort. See New Age versions for Hort's quote. Okay. So Dachshund is clearly in hell. He is really suffering right now. And I hope he is. Okay. But, okay. He is, one, trying to make hell sound like a great place. Two, you know, core of the earth, you know, not hell. And three, make evolution look beautiful too. Because remember, natural selection is terrible. It's kill. You know, everything else has to die. So evolution is religion of death. But they're making evolution look beautiful. Like Charles Darwin said, you know, if from the war of nature and famine and death, the most exalted animal were capable of conceiving the product of higher animals. He's saying that, oh, this is great. The death is great. That's how we get ahead. Well, anyway, I'm just covering the other things to tell you how much he did, and he believed in evolution strongly. Noah scored a service to Hades, the motionless bust of Hermes, which is another name for the devil, a god of the devil, hath adorned their living quarters. Did not come to life to escort Waddell and Dachshund to Hades, as the Greek myths teach. In fact, the Underland in Alice in Wonderland was taken directly from the Greek writings of Homer and the other writings of Virgil. As such, it was portrayed as a land of wonder, not of weeping and gnashing of teeth, Matthew 8:12. Students of the classics see so many parallels between the Alice books and the Greek and Latin classics, the Oxford Companion to Classical Literature, 1937 edition, directs the readers to Alice in Wonderland to see a picture of Virgil's Griffon. Alice in Wonderland was written as a dream, mimicking the dreams wherein Odysseus and Aeneas visited the shades of the underworld. The underworld was described in the book 6 of the Odyssey and books 6 of book 11 of the Odyssey and book 6 of the Aeneid. Virgil sees on the river's bank a flock of birds. Dachshund's tale tells of a queery looking party that assembled on the bank, with birds with draggled feathers. He's copying these pagan stories by Homer and Virgil and making it into this evolution-filled book and Satanism-filled book and Spiritism-filled book and Humanism-filled book. Alice said, I thought those unicorns were fabulous. Not from fables, not real, not the ones talked about in the Bible. Monsters, too. New Bible version editors, whose mothers read Alice in Wonderland to them, were preconditioned to remove the unicorn from the new Bibles. They are like today's children who have actually seen in Star Trek and now believe that the cosmology of the Bible is not true. Remember, I talked about Star Trek. It's really dangerous. Remember Captain Spock making that V shape on his hand? That's a Masonic lodge symbol. Look at the picture of Henry Dell and hazardous materials. We believe he's doing that. A lot of other people like King Khufu, Origin, Masonic Lodge, the Masonic Lodge handshake, Satanist Anthony LaVey, of course, and some others. We don't know if Billy Graham was doing it or not. We don't think so, because he helped the Southern Baptist Church, even though he believed in theistic evolution. But Star Trek is as dangerous as Star Wars, which says, let the Force be with you. In another of his books, Dachshund copied Virgil's story of the courts of Hades from the Aeneid. Hades' river, called Styx, mirrors Alice's pools of tears. The justice of Dachshund's Queen of Hearts is from Virgil's Aeneid in its Roman underworld. Dachshund's Wonderland and Virgil's underworld have strikingly similar judicial systems. The Queen of Hearts said, sentence first, verdict afterwards, as did Virgil. The queen says, off with your head, but Griffin assures Alice that it won't really happen, i.e., there is really no punishment for sin. The Griffon says, they never executes nobody, you know. Come on. Like a universalist, the Dodo says, Everyone has one, and all must have a prize. Kind of like a humanist, you know? Humanist, spiritist, Satanist, evolutionist. Dawson mocks the Bible's judgment in Matthew 19:28, which says, "Ye also shall sit upon 12 thrones, judging." Dawson says, "The trial's beginning. The judge, by the way, was the king. Around him were 12 judges, a scroll of parchment, and blasts on the trumpet. The evidence consisted of verses." Verses. Interesting. Dawson calls the 12 judges stupid things, writing down stupid things. In Book of the Alice book, the king is depicted as a buffoon. So making the 12 judges in the Bible sound stupid and in God sounding like the biggest idiot. I can't believe it. He was the way worse than Max Mueller. Max Mueller sounded crazy, but this guy was worse. And they're calling, and even in Rebecca, they're calling Charles Dawson a Christian. They are crazy. They need to study the person before they talk about how good they were, you know? What was Dawson's motive for the resketching the underworld to negate the Bible's picture of hell? Dawson denounced the doctrine of eternal punishment as a mistranslation of New Testament Greek. What was Dawson's source of redefining hell? Of a child, he had used Liddell's Scott lexicon. He thought that the Bible had been mistranslated since the word some Greek letters in describing punishment did not mean eternal, according to liberal lexicons. Cohen says of Dawson, he concludes that the word rendered in English as eternal or everlasting has been mistranslated. It may not mean everlasting in Greek mythology, Hellenistic culture, or Greek English lexicons taken from them, but it does not mean everlasting in the Bible. The Bible is a revelation from God who created languages. It defines just what each of its words mean. Thomas writes of Dawson's disbelief in the Christian doctrine of eternal damnation and bodily resurrection. Both men, F.D. Maurice and Dawson, believed that all souls will achieve salvation or remission from eternal punishment. Maurice's Church Universal includes everyone as Coleridge ideals of unity, humanism, evolutionism. Maurice seems to have a powerful influence in his later rejection of such doctrines as eternal punishment. Thomas said of Dawson, his own later religious development was as critical as biblical fundamentalism as Maurice's. Charles Dawson had everything to do with, like, Ruskin and Mueller. Dawson and Ruskin, Liddell's social center was as harbored to not one, but two pedophiliacs, another Tweedlam and Tweedley, is really dumb and indeed depraved. Ruskin got to Christ Church for 14 years before Dawson. Dawson and Ruskin's friendship began in 1857 and grew during the next 20 years, when in 1875 Dawson photographed him. Dawson's biographer said he could have thought himself displaced at the deanery by John Ruskin, at that time a welcome friend of the Liddells. And Ruskin, we are bound to know, and was another admirer of little girls and by means indifferent to Dean Liddell's daughters. He taught Alice to draw. Dawson easily got Ruskin to sign a child friend's autograph. Dawson's Alice in Wonderland included the thin disguises of John Ruskin as Conger Eel. Ruskin, too, had his brain washed away by classical Greek literature. Dawson consulted Ruskin about his book's illustrations. They shared a mutual interest in art and persons involved in London's bohemian lifestyle. Dawson and Mueller. Liddell's artistic and architectural passion saw its expression not only in the interest he shared with Dawson in photography, but in the lavish redecorating of his college, church, and deanery. During one of Liddell's decorating frenzies, he added an elaborate staircase built upon his share in the proceeds of the Greek lexicon. If the lexicon does not make sense, it surely made sense with a C, like money. Their mutual, Max Mueller said, the deanery of Christ Church was not only made architecturally into a new house, but under Dr. Liddell, with his charming wife and daughters, became a social center not easily rivaled anywhere else. There one met only royalty, but many eminent writers, artists, and political men, Ruskin and many others. Around Liddell's social center spun mad tea parties that included Dawson and Max, Mr. New Age Mueller. Dawson's diaries record that he and Max Mueller were one of another's guests and also met at Liddell's deanery dinners. On May 30th, 1867, the Muellers and their young two daughters posed for Dawson's camera. as they continued to do over the next 3 years. Dachshund commented to the loveliness of the two girls, Ada and Mary. Max Mueller had contributed the word fetishism into the 1894 Kraft Ebeling book, Psychopathia Sexualis, a book which also describes Dachshund's own mania. Dachshund's bookshelf was full of other books about insanity. He pursued friendships with other men who were interested in mental aberrations, such as Commissioner and Lunacy. Such a whirling circle of madness leads Alice to say, "It's enough to drive one crazy." Literally. Thomas said, "Oddity was a chief characteristic of Alice's world, and indeed of Dachshund's own behavior. He was told to his face by those unaware of his alter ego that the famous Lewis Carroll had gone mad." By the way, Charles Dachshund was responsible for the Harrow Boys scandal, which they dress like women. They have you look at the picture of those people. Some are dressed like men, some are women. He was in charge of that. Okay, this guy ain't Christian, okay? Why do they call him Reverend Charles Dachshund? He was not a good priest. He was priest of Templar in Christ Church. He was not good. Dachshund and Jowett. Portraits of Waddell. Dachshund and Jowett merged to fill one page of Thomas' biography. Humphrey Waddell was the mastermind. In the end, Dachshund's belief merged with Jowett's anti-Bible prejudices. Within the confines of Oxford in the 1850s and 60s, Dachshund and Jowett might also have assumed the roles of Tweedlam and Tweedley, the manner who lent themselves easily to caricature. The manner of their lives had much in common, both their bachelor duns who lent themselves easily to caricature. In Dachshund's original illustrations for Alice in Wonderland, the caterpillar has a facial resemblance to Benjamin Jowett. You kind of notice that if you look at the movie. The caterpillar's Socratic style mimicked Jowett's lecture style. In 1983, Shane Leslie wrote that Dachshund's book was a satire on the Oxford movement, with Jowett as the caterpillar and Cardinal Wiseman as the Cheshire Cat. The fact that Waddell raised Jowett's salary, in spite of the various, very serious charges of heresy against him, elicited a poem from Dachshund. "In passing rich with 40 pounds a year, and so I ween we would have been till now, and had not his friends, 'twere long to tell you now how, prevailed on him, Jack Horner liked to try some method to evaluate his pie, and win from those dark depths this skillful thumb, 5 times 100 weight of Lucius Plum." Dachshund and Eliot and Stanley, Newman and Kingsley. Dachshund held hands around the maypole with all of Waddell's strange friends. Literary critics suspect that Dachshund's was influenced by his thinking and writing by George Eliot's The Mill on the Floss. Remember that George Eliot was a homosexual. So was he. He had missed from her scenes from Clerical Life, just as Waddell did. Russell also had a red heretic, Charles Kingsley, whose publisher also printed Dachshund's books. Dachshund was a friend of A.P. Stanley, whose wife had shown Dachshund's photographic portraits to the Queen. Dachshund even pursued Catholic Cardinal Newman to sit for a photograph, and he agreed. Dachshund fit like the March Hare at Waddell's Mad House Tea Party. Children not aware of the evil surrounding the author of the child's story, Alice in Wonderland. Wise parents should avoid it. Christians are not aware of the evil surrounding Alice's father, Henry Waddell, the author of the Greek-English Lexicon. Google says that Charles Dachshund got Alice from Alice Waddell. But they never mention anything about Henry Waddell and how evil he was, wicked. Pastors and Christians would be wise to avoid this lexicon's Bible-destroying banter, which is buried throughout the minefield of all Greek, English, New Testament dictionaries and lexicons. One last thing here. When I use a word, I'm said Humpty Dumpty, and said it in a rather scornful tone, it means just what I choose it to mean, neither more nor less. The question is, whether you can make words mean different things. The question is, said Humpty Dumpty, which is to be master, that's all. They have a temper, some of them, particularly verbs, they're the proudest. Adjectives you can do anything with, but not verbs. However, I can manage the whole lot. A peek at the beliefs of the few of those pagan philosophers, those Greek writings they are consulted, will frighten any Christian of an even modest discernment. Reading these Greek writings would be like watching an X-rated Greek movie to see what the words love, God, soul, or hell really mean in English. It will not work. I'm more tired from talking. Okay. A is Chiles. As the originator of the Hollywood play, he added a second speaker to the Greek drama. He was initiated into the Eleusinian mysteries, classical occultism. His play entitled Persians included sacrifices at tombs with spirits appearing. His writings, from which Thayer gleans word meanings, include such things as Zeus' mistress, revenge, murder, respect for the gods, being seduced by Zeus, being to haunt him, and someone who savagely kills. Plays full of sex and violence in Greece are not good places to find the fine distinction between love and Christian charity. All right, here's the mathematician, Aristophanes. People think he was good just because he was a philosopher and he was a mathematician. Well, I like his math concept, but I don't like what he teaches. Here's what he teaches. Aristophanes, a Greek playwright whose works are described as follows. The plays unrestrained sexuality and obscenity, men dressed as women, and drag, he who gets drunk, in a party from which he staggers away happily with a girl in each arm. Sappho, the poetess, was again living in Lesbos in the society of young girls. Scandal put an immoral interpretation on the society. Would this be a good place to find unseemly shamefacedness or sobriety? Euripides. Lots of murder, suicide, sacrifice to the underworld goddess, and the bloodthirsty who kills her own children. Sounds like Callie, you know? If that is not enough, bring in a horror movie script with the original one-eyed monster, Cyclops, all written by a misogynist woman-hater. Kind of like Charles Darwin, he said, you know, a married man is a poor slave, worse than a Negro. Of course, he couldn't keep his job or his life if he said that, you know. Sophocles. I don't know how to. They need a pronunciation key on this. Sophocles or something. Humanism glory. Many wonders there are, but nothing more wonderful than a human being. Let's write a hymn to humanity. Sophocles gave us Oedipus. Who married his own mother. Let's go to his house for a Bible study. Humanism comes right from evolution, guys. Isocrates, the orator, spoke about enlightened self-interest. Not a good place to find the definition of charity. Self-interest. Humanism. Evolutionism. Now Socrates, he sometimes went to the spellbound trances. He claimed to be guided by a divine sign or voice. He believed in the daemon who spoke to him, and he corrupts the young. These crimes brought Socrates to trial. He was found guilty and sentenced to death. He committed suicide. Plato, one of his students, was a product of his sodomite corruption. Would he be a good guy to determine the meaning of the Greek word demon, King James Version devil, or divinity? Plato, he was a philosopher whose idea of the divinity of man and heavy homosexual aura have destroyed untold thousands of who have followed his idea, Neoplatonists, B.F. Westcott, etc. Plato wrote of the Eastern doctrine of the one, of which particular objects are of sense are imperfect copies. The NIV are loaded with a reference to this one, generated from secular lexicography. The one is the devil, and they always refer to God, to the holy God, you know, the Lord, they say the one, calling God the devil, you know. And these people talk about the one. And humanism, let's see, man, it could go on forever. All these people have humanism or evolutionism thinking. Cratinus, he writes political comedy plays, confessing himself a hard drinker. Anaximander, he was a teacher of Hindu philosophy who believed in chaos, out of which all things proceed and which things return. Wait. What is he saying? Chaos, out of which all things proceed and to which things return. That sounds like evolution. I think exploding dot and creating order, I think that's chaos. I think it's chaos that something gets better and all these things die. I think it's chaos that most things can't die because they don't have a perfect place. I think it's chaos that these animals turn into crazy things. Like, why would a bacteria evolve into a human? Because a bacteria is, I think, more complex, way more complex than a human. You know? Alright. Anaximander, a chaos in which all things proceed and which things return. Evolutionist. Anacreon, he paid perpetual homage to wine and love with his drinking songs. Silius, italicus, probably where I get italics. He died in 102 by starving himself to death. Not at 102, starving himself to death. Like the pessimistic view of how human men got here, that's why he would starve himself to death. Come on. Like the human body is a parasite. Like Margaret Sanger believes that the baby, unborn baby, is a parasite in the woman's womb. That's another thing that justified abortion. Since her, 25% of the black population has been killed by abortion. Notice that most of the abortions are done by blacks. That's why she hated. Abortions are really to get rid of blacks mostly. And you know, they say that someone said that the world has cancer. The cancer is man. Prince Philip, the husband of Queen Elizabeth, said that if I were to be reincarnated, I would come back as a killer virus to grow lower human population. So this guy believed a form of evolution and racism. Seneca L. Ennius. He was a philosopher who was banished to Corsica on the ostensible charge of being a participator and accomplice in the debaucheries of Julia. Sotades, he wrote malicious satires, partly on indelicate subjects and sarcastic remarks about the marriage of the king. Philodemus, he was a philosopher of the Epicurean school who wrote chiefly on indelicate subjects. Pythagoras, he studied the mystic glory of the East, and especially the wisdom of the Egypts. He believed in the transmigration of the souls, like Hinduism. Porphyry. He wrote a treatise against the Christians in 15 books, which was publicly burned. Plutarch, he wrote on the oracles of the Pythian snake priestess and Isis and Osiris. Plotinus, he sat under Ammonius Saccas, the founder of the Neoplatonism. He had a mystical tendency, especially in his doctrine of the ecstatic elevation of the soul to divine being, in which he himself attained on 4 occasions. Hey. His doctrine of the ecstatic elevation of the soul to the divine being, to which he himself attained on 4 occasions. Is he saying that we started simple? Like, they call bacteria simple, they're not, but started as like a simple life form, you know, primitive unicellular organism, and we're going to be gods one day? That's exactly what he's talking about. Evolution did not start with Charles Darwin. With Satan in the Garden of Eden, ye shall be as gods. This is exactly what Plotinus believed. Plautus, he was a comic poet and had pungent, if often coarse, wit, which means he did really bad jokes in his comic poet. Philostratus, you might get a kind of cloud from him. I don't know. I mean, a lot of things are named after Greek, which is ridiculous. He was a Greek sophist who wrote The Romantic Life of Apollonius of Tyana. Heraclitus, he believed from fire all things originate and return to it again by a never-ending process of development. It's another person who believes in a type of evolution. From fire all things originate. Well, people believe that the earth was a hot molten mass. It cooled down, formed a rocky crust. It rained on the rocks for millions of years. And out came the first life form. The soup, which the rocks contain a chemical, And so he is saying from fire all things originate. And the lava was once rock, turned into rocks, as they believe. Never-ending process of development, turning into gods one day. Man, never ends. Xenophanes, he wrote the Eleatic school and created the doctrine of the one, the devil. He is called the father of pantheism, who declared God to be the eternal unity, permeating the universe. Universalist. Humanist. Evolutionist. He was Philo. He was a philosopher who joined Platonism and Judaism. Sounds like a good place to find what Jesus Christ was thinking of when he gave the New Testament. Nicander, he was a priest of Apollo. Lucian, he assails with a special bitterness Christianity. Homer, among other things, he wrote a collection of hymns on the various gods. Apollo, Hermes, which was another name for the devil. Pythian, snake goddess, which probably the devil. Aphrodite, etc. Their object is to praise the god at whose festival is the recitation took place. Heraclitus believed, the world, therefore, rose from fire and the alternating periods resolved again into fire. They believe that the earth is going to one day crash into the sun, so we're all going to become lava again. They're saying we're stardust, which is fire. Heliodorus, he was a pagan sophist who wrote novels about romance. Himerius, he was a pagan. His philosophy was a nihilistic system, which he summed up in three propositions. A. Nothing exists. That's what believe that. That's that Stanislaw Przewidzki. That guy, he believed in that. He was also an evolutionist. Epictetus, I don't know. He believed that the power of which he should be in most awe is the deity of his own breast. Humanism. Evolutionism. You go on and on. It just everybody. Almost about half of the people I just named really have to do with evolution. Alright, those are most of them. And so, you guys say, what's the point? Well, the point is, the evolutionary theory is dangerous, really dangerous. There might be a part 3. I don't know, because I'm wondering if I might cover the life of the B.F. Westcott and Fenton John Hort and what they did, because I want to cover everything, kick every dog, chase every rabbit, shoot every whatever. Okay, I want to go every rabbit trail. Okay. Because this is a really important topic. I got to cover everything. And I just covered horrible, horrible people that believed in evolution and were spiritists, Satanists. So I want you guys to think about how peaceful creation is. It's the most peaceful thing ever. It's wonderful. There's nothing wrong with it. There was not one creationist that was a Satanist. You can look me up. You can look up any study. There is not one creationist who is a spiritist or Satanist. Because creationist is the exact opposite. Evolution is a form of spiritism and Satanism. Why don't you guys turn to God? Alright, I can't prophesy, so I'm not Isaiah or someone. So I don't know if I'm going to do part 3. I will try. See you, tune in the next session.